That was a deep voice you had, Jennifer. Well, good morning, everybody. Matt Hansen's online. I know Dave Berard and Phil Grayson have a couple other commitments this morning. They may join us near the end. But so I've kind of, what's the saying, Nathaniel? And I've got the keys to the car, drive it like you stole it or something like that. So we're going to have fun. I've got Nathaniel and Tricia here with me in Madison. And,
hi, everybody.
Say good morning, Nathaniel.
Good morning, everyone.
It's beautiful weather here in Madison this morning. A little cloudy, but the sun's going to come out and warm up a little bit. But it's been cool. It's been a cool summer. It's hard to believe that we're already over halfway through summer. Many of the counties have had county fairs. My kids were quite involved with the Jefferson County Fair this year, and each year that continues to grow in responsibility and the need to be present. So, so the agenda is sent out. We have a number of different points that that we're going to focus on this morning, and I'm hoping to save quite a bit of time for questions and answers at the end of the at the end of this, but wanted to start off with some area extension director updates. I suspect that your office has been visited by the newly appointed area extension directors within the last several weeks. I know they've appreciated opportunities to meet with you as department heads, with the committees, with administrators, and with staff. And these meetings are going to be critical as the area extension directors are making those connections with key stakeholders, learning about the processes, when committees meet, and obviously there's a steep learning curve, especially with this with the first month or two, as they're getting used to their positions and figuring out what priorities are and working through budgets and learning each of the county's unique cultures, and I think we all understand what that looks like, maybe more so if you've had to work in multiple counties than just a single county. But each county is unique in the way that it functions, and there's, you know, that's kind of neat in a way, and it can be somewhat frustrating in other ways, because when you've got 72 counties kind of doing things 72 different ways, it can create some challenges, especially with scheduling and such. But I would like to say that as we look at the department had expectations during this transition, you know, for the next month or so, I think Dave and I are really encouraging the area extension directors to focus on the relationship building, being present at meetings, getting to know staff in their respective offices, and engaging in those budget conversations. And I know in my conversations with area extension directors that's certainly underway and moving forward in a positive way. The roles and expectations of the current department heads essentially continue as they have in the past, and Dave and I will be making some written announcements when those department head responsibilities begin to shift to the area extension directors. I see the first decision probably coming up in the next week or so, and Trish and I are trying to finalize this, is making a transition to the absence reporting of staff within their respective areas. So that'll be one of the first things, working with the benefits office, making sure that all of the staff are getting transitioned so that the area extension director will be the primary sign-off, and I'm guessing Dave and I will be the secondary sign-off on all of the absence reports. But until that written notification is out, I encourage department heads to continue to, you know, make sure those absences are signed off on in a timely fashion. And you know, again, we'll be communicating to the department heads each step along the way in writing when we're making these transitions.
Matt, can I ask a question about that?
Yes, you can.
This is Lori Zero from Pierce County. As department heads, we're also responsible for signing off on our county paid support staff time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something the area directors will do as well?
You know, that's a larger conversation. I'm trying to remember how much farther down the agenda. But Lori, let me come back to that. I mean, I do plan on talking about that. In the meantime, you're correct. The department head should continue to sign off on that. And as we talk about some of these responsibilities and county expectations of, you know, we'll be coming to that point in a few minutes.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Actually, I think that's the next point here that I was going to talk about. And in terms of strategizing and role clarification, because area extension directors have been, you know, asking, I think, as many questions as the department heads, as they've been having conversations with the county partners about counties, the desire for counties to have a point person in the office. And what's that going to look like? And by having that local person that they can connect with if questions come up, but personally, and I think department heads understand this too, there are going to be times when you're out of the office, maybe you're on vacation, maybe you're doing an educational program, but I don't think that the way we've operated in the past and the situations and conditions that we've worked on in the past are going to be much different than maybe an area extension director who may not necessarily be in that county every day, but just a phone call away. And the good news is, the way I look at this is, we have 5 months yet to strategize on the needs and the issues and have some suggestions in terms of what that might look like. I still have high hopes, I guess, that the area extension director is going to be able to manage and work with counties to kind of figure out what this is going to look like. I've had a couple people provide some suggestions, and I encourage that. If you have ideas on how that might look and work, please let myself and Dave and even the area extension directors know. But one example that came in, someone said, well, maybe we need to have like a $500 stipend on one single point person within the office. But multiply that by 72 counties, that's $35,000, and that goes a long way towards paying an additional educator. So we really need to kind of think about how we balance that, how we ensure the county partner that they'll have an adequate response as questions and situations come up. But I think we also want to carefully assess how we can best meet those needs. And again, we've got 5 months, really, you know, through the end of December, with the support of the department heads and with the regional directors to try to work those out. So that, I hope, Lori, that answers your question, and I'll pause for a moment to see if there are any other questions on area extension updates before I move on to communication updates. Okay. So under communications, I know as we're working on budgets, and you as department heads have a big role in that, it might be tempting to ask a colleague whether he or she is going to be retiring as those budget discussions are occurring, as a way to kind of explore opportunities. And I guess our suggestion, our encouragement is don't do that. Avoid that temptation and asking if or when a person's going to be retiring. And the reason I say that is because it can present some legal challenges to you and or extension. And if a person elects to self-disclose that information, that's one thing, but technically, until it's in writing and received by the hiring authority, those discussions shouldn't be taking place. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but I think it's just kind of maybe common, maybe instinctive to say, hey, when are you retiring? You know, let us know so we can begin to plan for that. And that's one of those questions that isn't doesn't fall within those legal framework of questions to ask, kind of like, when are you going to have a child or something like that. So stay away from that, if you would, please, and things will work out and fall into place, when that time comes. But just wanted to make that clear. I think last Friday, there were a number of emails that came out. One that I know in my conversations, I think many colleagues have kind of started maybe ignoring those next generation communication pieces, but many people have also been asking the question about these position outlines, and that was released. Those kind of decision points and position outlines were released on July 21st, last Friday, and that was part of the Next Generation Project Communications document. So each of the different type of positions, extension specialist, outreach programmer, associate extension educator, program coordinator, and extension educator, each of those position titles or position types was released. And Tricia, do you have anything you'd like to add on that?
So just a reminder that these are position outlines and the position descriptions will follow. These are what gives a more general sense of what these positions are. But when you come up with, like, the youth and family educator, those are going to be real more specific to, obviously, the discipline and that focus for that staff. So we'll be basing the position descriptions off of these outlines, so working with HR to make sure these titles all align correctly, as well as the new institute directors and that who will also be responsible for these educator positions. So, and the remaining positions. So I just wanted to, just a reminder that these aren't necessarily the PDs, but I know people were eager to see what these might look like. We do have the next round of positions coming up, and you'll see those shortly for our institute directors and center directors as well, for those next positions yet to come and be hired for. So, any questions about those position outlines?
Just a comment. Karen Dickrell and Adagini, and when we were working on budget, we looked at the position outlines.
Yes.
And I think they have now been updated, but if you read it on Friday, it was reading children and families extension educator, and the correct terminology is youth and families, so I think that has been corrected now. I got an email this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for catching that. We've had several versions of these, and I think that's where that language probably came from, and so it was a newer update with the naming conventions for the institute, so all of the following documents had to be updated. So thank you for catching that. We're continually trying to make sure those updates are made, and I know Nathaniel has updated it as of this morning, so again, if you see anything else that looks peculiar or you're wondering about, please do let us know. Sometimes things do slip through.
So I noticed that as well. So for the record, yep. Nathaniel and Tricia, is it children and families or youth and families the way we had it on that initial budget sheet?
So we have youth and – now I'm getting confused too. So
it's
youth and family.
Yep. Okay.
So
yes, the budget sheets were okay. It was when this came out on Friday I have the right stuff for my budget.
Yeah. Yep. The challenge was our table.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah. Sorry about that.
At one point in time, there was a question of could we distinguish between a youth educator and a family educator rather than a youth and family, because they, when the counties look at it and they have a position that has the same title for two different persons, they see that as one job being done by two people versus two different jobs being done by two different people.
Yep. It does appear duplicative, and I was gonna add that is in many of my conversations with counties, when a county office has two of those positions, we've in some cases bolded the word children or bolded the word families based on you know who's doing that, so that it does kind of show that emphasis in that. And I would suspect that as we get into the actual titles, the working titles of these positions, it would probably be even more specific to maybe family financial management or family well-being or economic development or, you know, whatever that specialization might be within that person's wheelhouse.
And I think HR is definitely open to that. Those working titles can be more descriptive of what they are. And so, you know, as people take on these working titles, that makes a lot more sense. as well as I know, Matt, you've talked about in those budget discussions, kind of talking about what that area of emphasis is, that area of focus, mm-hmm. which is something what kind of those, you look down, if you look at those where those centers fall, that's where that more differentiation of those positions will be, is they'll fall into those, kind of those centers that have that specific focus. So, I agree. I think these look rather broad in general, but when you start breaking it down, you're going to want to have that area of focus.
So, and one other point of clarification, too, if you're looking at that table one, with the final recommendations, there was the Institute for Health and Well-Being, and so that's likely going to be a position title that doesn't
yes.
show up on those initial budget
yep.
preparation sheets. So not that I think it's going to be a huge difference. I think the pricing, and maybe you can confirm, that'll be aligned with the children and families educators.
Yep.
So, again, I think as we can think about that as we're having conversations and discussions with the committees and if those questions come up. But when we first unveiled the budgets, because we knew even a month ago counties needed those that flat fee structure right away, that wasn't a piece of that, but it is now. So
yeah, and what we envisioned is that as those conversations, this is, you know, again, some of the, that next year we'll have this much more those the structure very well established. This, as we're getting it, going through this transition, while we do have that Institute of Health and Well-Being, you may be, that specialty kind of area, they may be looking like they're in youth and family, but they'll be actually be kind of more aligned with the health and well-being. So I think we'll make that distinction. Again, this has, it's the same pricing. It's more going to be sort of in our assignment of those individuals to an institute down the road. So, you know, as Matt said, this is it's an institute that was, that definition came from the feedback of others and as a need. Right now, all of those individuals, I would say, are considered in youth and family, but we'll see those who have that more alignment with health and well-being will be kind of pulled into that area. I think what the counties see, though, is the same cost structure and just that general description.
Okay. Thank you, Tricia.
Yeah.
And just for those that haven't seen these outlines yet, it does list the core responsibilities, the program responsibilities, collaboration and networks, accountability, ideal qualifications, appointment type, funding. So kind of all that general information is packaged into it's less than 4 pages in most cases. And again, it's not the position description, but a lot of this is going to be kind of embedded within that position description when those are finalized. Okay. The third point there under communication updates, on Friday, the 21st at 9:09, Carl had sent faculty members, and I had to look at that to see if it was kind of extension all, but it was really sent to faculty members the update on probationary faculty and tenure updates, and that was there were a number of questions that surfaced, and I think the dean's whistling was, it must have been July 10th, I guess because of the holiday, July 4th. So I think it was July 10th, but Carl had really framed much of this, and there were a number of questions that came up from colleagues that that I was responding to, and I sent Carl some of that feedback. So it is in a written form now in terms of the decisions and kind of how we're moving forward and what that looks like for tenured faculty. All tenured county-based faculty are going to retain their current position description, salary, and positions, assuming that county financial and program support's in place and that there aren't any current outstanding performance issues. Carl said that faculty may need to or may be asked to work in multiple counties depending on specific situations, but faculty are remain as faculty and have that option of staying within the county or multiple counties, or they can apply for some of these extension specialist roles or other center director roles, other opportunities in the future. I think the bigger questions that I've had quite a bit of feedback on come from probationary faculty, and what does that look like? So you know, that information has also been listed out in what Carl had sent. Just kind of looking back at my notes, but let's see. So the you know, the tenure process, tenure has to be through the regular SRP committee, and I think I get the two committees mixed up. If it's faculty tenure it's faculty tenure advisory committee by the end of December, and you know, the tenure process will continue as normal through June 30th. But for probationary faculty that missed that December 30th, 2017 cutoff, there are going to be opportunities for probationary faculty to apply for other academic staff or even tenure track positions when they're determined in the new model. And then that went into a little bit more specifics about the notification of non-renewal starting December 31st for probationary faculty that aren't eligible to apply for tenure, they haven't achieved tenure, or have not successfully competed for a faculty or academic staff position by the end of the year. So there's going to be additional opportunities. Those non-renewed faculty positions would officially end on December 31st, 2018. So that's essentially a year and a half from now. But, you know, and during that one-year time period, those non-renewed faculty would be able to compete for faculty academic staff positions and also be expected to continue their work as described by their current position description and such. So, again, a lot of questions. I understand the feeling of frustration from those that, you know, have maybe just missed that tenure cutoff time and I think in one way or another that's happened to many people. Whether it's maybe missing merit or, you know, salaries, pay plans, you know, not coming through and things like that. So I understand the frustration that's caused. And,
this is Penny Pink, and I just wondered, was that email sent to department heads as well? Because as an academic staff member, I do not receive faculty emails, and I may receive questions in my office.
So, good question. We do have it posted on our NextGen website. So when it went out to faculty, just being careful of this being a sensitive situation, we wanted to get it right out to faculty, those affected. But you're absolutely right. So if you do have questions that way, so what we can do is send you, right soon or right after this, we'll just send a link to all of you who are on this, the department head list as well, a link to that decision document. And that outlines just exactly kind of what Matt laid out, both for tenured and probationary faculty decisions. We're looking at how we best communicate it versus like system-wide versus trying to directly connect with those who are most affected.
I do think it's a good idea. Let's send it to the department heads because they're likely going to be receiving questions from other colleagues, and especially if they're academic staff and there are a number of them across the state, then they can field those questions.
Yep. Thank you for the question.
Yep. Thank you, Penny.
Matt, this is Lori Zirl again. Could I ask another question?
You may, Lori.
Thank you very much. So I'm hearing from some counties that there's a potential of cutting some of the staff to meet budget requirements. And if they chose to decrease current probationary faculty's position, not eliminate it, but decrease it, in that next year then, does the state still have the obligation to cover that other portion, or would they just go to that decreased FTE?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it would be the FTE at which they were hired or which they're currently under, and if the county removes funding or FTE from a person to make the budget meet, I think it would be similar to you know, part-time, what we used to call 73rd County, but that's a good question, Lori, and I think it's one that Trish and I will look into, and we'll see if we can get that in a fact sheet or something.
Yeah, and I think, Lori, it's the same thing we face with faculty as well, or faculty, and honestly, what we're trying to do most is, you know, we have these our valuable resources in our faculty and probationary faculty and our staff, and if counties, you know, if, again, with these budget discussions, we're looking to sharing positions so that individual may be part-time in that county and part-time in another. I think, you know, that's there's lots of sort of considerations for how we utilize those resources and that individual's expertise. That's not something we want to lose. And so so I think, again, it's our responsibility. We have our responsibilities for those positions and those individuals, and we want to work to use those and find the best fit as possible. So, and I think Matt and Dave and the regional directors and now area extension directors and all of you have already been doing that and making those tough decisions and working with others on collaborating. So I'm seeing that happen already. And probationary or not, especially this year, we need to be working with finding a fit for those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Lori. Other questions?
Matt, this is Craig Sachs. I was asked a question. The comment, we've had clear communication about extension special, faculty could slip into extension specialist positions or could stay as educators with their faculty status. These position outlines also talk about the outreach programmer, which is a academic staff position,
mm-hmm.
but the qualifications start from PhD, master's, you know, BVS. Can a faculty status, somebody that's already in the faculty ranks right now, take that position and take a leave of absence from their faculty position while they're serving in that role?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, Matt, if you have an answer right away for that one, too. That's one where that's one we'll want to be kind of pulling into, and I can imagine that's a really good FAQ coming up for others, because I think that's the talk about taking a leave. So these outreach programmer positions are, you know, looking at more statewide, regional, having that expertise. They different from the extension specialists. They don't have as much of that. That they don't have the scholarship emphasis, which is why that's the difference in some of those expectations. So that's not that tenure track. Those aren't the tenure track positions. Whether or not somebody who's in a tenure track position chooses to go into those, I think let's think through, and we'll talk with HR about some of those specific decisions. So all of those, that could be on a sort of case-by-case basis of how that might work for some individual's appointments and such. So I don't want to speak too definitively about it. So I just wanted to lay out a couple of those thoughts. But why don't we'll take that back, and we can work on an answer to that shortly.
Thanks, Trish. I just wanted to raise the question, because as an area director now, I've taken a leave of absence from my faculty role. It would be similar, could be similar for an outreach programmer.
Yeah.
It's a good question, and we can we'll come up with an answer and work through that shortly here. So thank you.
Yeah. My hunch would be that we'd try to focus on extension specialists, you know, getting as many faculty moved into some of those mm-hmm. key positions as quickly as possible, and maybe hold a little bit more with outreach programmers until the model's more fully in place. But we'll look into that.
Thank you.
Any other questions on communications or our recent discussions here?
Matt, this is Tom Wojciechowski up in Ashland.
Tom?
We got our numbers through Julie for the various positions, but I didn't see numbers for the associate extension educator position. Is that the same salary or same cost to the county as a program coordinator, or is there another level there?
Well, and those If you read those outlines, that's really focusing on more of the food-wise educator. Although when it says single program center, I think that could likely also be kind of connected perhaps with the center, what is it, the Center for Wisconsin 4-H. That's that second single program center, but,
And yeah, so I'll speak to that a little bit. We, as Matt was saying, these have been a little bit more one-off conversations around positions that look a little closer to an associate extension educator. We don't have a fixed fee yet for that associate extension educator position. That's just one that there were very few of those, and so we're going to take those on a case-by-case basis. How we've been running through those, and others may have those different stories, is if there's a position that looks a little closer to that, and I think there's been some horticulture examples, Matt, that may have fallen into your areas in your zone.
Mm-hmm.
But because sometimes those positions, if you look at the flat fee structure for an educator is out of sync with what that position and that expectation may be for that position. So they've readjusted those salaries to align with closer to what a program coordinator. Again, this is an individual discussion at a county level. So if you have a position that does look closer to what that associate extension educator role may be, that's something just to talk with Matt and Dave about and see what we can do. Because again, we don't want to. We wanted to get the majority of those positions out there and the flat fee structure designed for those. When we had this small pool, and it's quite small when we looked at the numbers, less than 10, definitely. There's more like 5 out there. We were going to take those on a case-by-case basis and determine what that fee and that arrangement looks like for the county. So, again, this is going to be something I would expect next year, though, we'll have that flat fee structure in place for that role more solidly. This year we needed to get the rest out there and then work on these as they came.
So Tom, you'll note in that document that, you know, in terms of ideal qualifications, that's a bachelor's degree or high school diploma with applicable work experience. And from a funding standpoint, some of the funds may run through cooperative extension, but for most of these, I think currently they're grant funded, and cooperative extension contributes 100% of the salary fringe costs, and the county and tribe are still expected to, you know, support the position through facilities and supplies. But it more so closely aligns with the food-wise extension educators, although, as Tricia said, there are a handful of individuals, and that might have a hoard emphasis or something that could maybe fit into one of these future positions. And that would be a cost-share arrangement then with a flat fee that the county could pick up some of the funds.
Hi, I have a question. You talked about probationary faculty and tenure. Do you have any information about promotion to professor? Are we still on the same timeline, on the same pay upgrade with the merger or possible elimination of departments? What rules do they go under? Can you talk about that a little bit?
From as far as I know in all the conversations, none of the promotion piece has changed for academic staff or faculty. That's still on track. You know, timelines haven't changed. Processes haven't changed. I do think that Carl mentioned that obviously the academic departments are having conversations as well as the governance in terms of what that might look like in the future. So there may need to be some edits to position descriptions to kind of reflect that. But as far as I know, I think we're still encouraging faculty and academic staff to look at opportunities for promotion. Good question. Okay, we'll move on to budget and try to save some more time for questions at the end as well, too. But I know the budget discussions are well underway. I sincerely appreciate the assistance of you as department heads in helping move the budget discussions forward with your county committees and administration. again, recognizing these aren't easy discussions. In most cases, we're seeing an increase in the cost to what appears to be the same level of staffing in the past, and that's ranged from, you know, a couple thousand dollars up to $25,000 or more. I think Dave said he had one county that was looking at a $30,000 increase. Some points to consider in those conversations, again, and I've brought this up with my the area extension directors that I've been working with as we're working through these budgets, is, you know, the counties are no longer having to don't have a department head that's requiring 25% or in some cases quite a bit more of their time to do department head roles. So If you just look at that percentage of time on a, you know, just a little over 2,000 hours a year of work time, that's 500 hours of free time that opens up for that department head to spend time on programming. And so that may or may not resonate with the county partner. I think it also provides the county with the local staff that may have more flexibility to meet the service and educational needs and tasks that the county is regularly expecting from their local educators. I think it's we also kind of speak of, you're looking at one piece of the structure, one piece of the model, and that's that local presence. There's also going to be additional resources in the way of extension specialists that we've spoken about, these outreach programmers, that the area extension directors are going to be able to tap into for specific needs and issues within the county. So this network is going to be more robust, I think, especially the further away you are from Madison, where, you know, the integrated specialists, we're seeing probably few and far between up in the northern counties. These extension specialists and outreach programmers, the vision of that is to have them distributed across the state for easier access and greater visibility. So, again, I appreciate everyone's time with helping move those budget discussions forward. I know these aren't easy discussions, but it's we've seen kind of the spectrum of some counties willing to say yes, let's push this forward as we have, and others asking, you know, can we then kind of go to the next level of discussion about might we share with a neighboring county or how would that look? So that's an update, I guess, from my perspective as to where we are with the budget discussions. I will say, or will add as well too, as the agenda mentions, that we're having these discussions, we're building the 2018 budgets, but this isn't a formal authorization of positions either, which I think some counties might get a little concerned about, but we do have limited FTE, and if every county wanted to maintain their current or past staffing structure pattern, and I don't see that being an issue. There are a number of counties that are talking about sharing or maybe having to have less staff, but this isn't necessarily a staffing authorization until those program the institutes and the centers, those directors are in place and can kind of look strategically across the state in terms of staffing and density and things like that. I think that's when we'll have a better idea in terms of how that, as we look at those individual county budgets, how that's going to be filled with vacant positions.
Is this message being communicated to county extension committees and county administrators?
I believe so, and if not, that's a point that we can bring up again with area extension directors. But I know we spoke about that at the orientation meeting. Sometimes it slips. It slips the mind of individuals, myself included, in that case, I think it was the department head that was aware of that and said, oh, yeah, one other thing to consider. So, again, I don't believe it's going to be a major issue because we have a lot of vacancies. We have a lot of opportunity for refilling some of these positions, and not all counties are looking at the same staffing level.
Well, in terms of county and timeline, when do you think we'll know that? January?
No, I think it'll be sooner than that, I'm hoping.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Trisha and I are nodding our heads in different directions. So.
Well, I agree. I think this is going to be something sooner, given that we have to, those budget discussions and agreements, those contracts will be in place. And you all know also the timeline probably better, which is coming up this September to November. So what has happened, at least looking at the conversations, there's been over 65 of the counties plus tribes have been already had those discussions. But that has been an initial conversation. Not all of those have taken that initial budget to their committees, and so it's in process right now. But we're going to have to solidify those agreements this fall. And so if we're going to want to say whether or not we feel we can fill a vacancy or not before we make those agreements. So what we're doing right now is we're taking a look at those initial conversations and saying, okay, so here's what counties and the discussion has happened. How many positions is that? How many have we agreed to as far as vacancies? What does that look like as far as our ability and resources to fill those from our end? So this initial conversation is what the counties can and are willing to fund. And then we have to look and say, does that align with the resources and can we fill all of those vacancies, essentially? So as Matt said, we're optimistic, given that we do have a lot of vacancies. We've got movement. We've had people retire, move into area extension director positions. It's just, it's hard for us to say we can fill 100% of those requests.
If you could please make sure your phones are muted. I could do that remotely here, but then it's tough to hear your questions.
Hey, Matt, I have a question then, thinking about that, and again, that piece I think hasn't been, at least wasn't communicated, I think, very clearly. And I agree with you that there's enough openings, et cetera, it probably won't be a problem for all of the positions that are requested. But however, if and this is a question, if there has to be rationing then, would it be a first-come, first-served? So the counties that have the budgets in earlier, would they have more consideration than the ones that would come later?
I'd say we're trying to avoid that, Matt, and I know you're probably
pondering
that question.
That's a good question, Dan.
we've been talking about that for several months now, not trying to avoid that first come first serve idea. And so what we're eager to do is get these because this is a programmatic decision too at the statewide level of where we have resources for each of these programmatic areas. And so with the associate deans coming on soon, and then we're going to go to institute directors, but those associate deans right away will start looking and weighing in on these, that idea of if we need to, where would we want to place our resources and across that state area. So making those tough decisions we don't want it to come to that first come, first serve.
That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Because
in the past, the decisions for staffing were really made by regional directors, district directors prior to that. With the new model, much of the staffing decisions are going to be coming from those institute and center directors. So they're the ones that kind of hold the purse strings on the staffing and the decisions on how that staffing is going to be distributed. And they'll be working with area extension directors, who are the actual hiring authority, but they'll be working with area extension directors to strategize and figure out what's the best placing and how are those resources going to be distributed.
Yeah, I would say it's going to be a really kind of dynamic collaboration between the assistant deans and area extension directors in bringing that need and understanding that resource need from the community level, from those different communities of what kind of education and programmatic needs are there. And that would be a proposal sort of up to those associate deans and saying, here's where we feel we need the resources. And then those program directors can weigh in from understanding that statewide availability of resources. So again, I think that's going to be a regular conversation as we move forward with how this is structured.
Mm-hmm.
As you talk about the number of positions or the number that you're able to finance, evidently it sounds like you have some idea or inkling of the number of positions, whether it's through FTEs or actual positions with reduced FTEs that can be filled. Will that information be shared for each of the program areas and or position types that are out there so that we have a better understanding of what actually is available across the state?
So what I can say is that there's not like a – so when we've been looking at the number of positions, the proportion of what positions and where they fall is very closely aligned to what we have right now. So there's not necessarily a shift in saying we're going to de-emphasize an area and grow another right now. And so we have those, again, those programmatic areas that can may have that discussion. So where we see that, so it's a good question of like, what's that number? And I'm going to say that is, it's going to have to be discussed as that, as we face those resource decisions. So we can look at what those numbers are right now. We can look at what's coming in from the need and then have kind of a general direction. So I'm sorry that's very fuzzy, but like as far as like a solid number, I don't think we're there yet of having like that we can only have 56 of this. I think we have a general idea based upon what we have right now that we don't feel we can go over or don't want to fall too far under. But, you know, a solid one or two, I think, would be unrealistic to provide out there because I think that just makes people nervous.
So when you say you don't have that we have what we have now, does that mean that it's what we have now with all of the vacancies across the state, or is that what we had when we were at full staff? And if you don't have numbers, do you have financial amounts that are allocated for positions that can be shared?
Yeah.
So, Marion, in generality, and I don't remember the specific numbers, but I think in the old model we were talking about we had somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, 260 or 270 FTE. To get to the budget, the new budget model, we have, if I remember right, Trish, about 220 FTE that we can fill, 210.
A little lower, yeah.
Okay. Certainly, Mary, with the number of current vacancies, because so many individuals have now stepped into area extension director roles, those positions have become vacant. You know, that provides some flexibility, but we did need to reduce the number of FTE. Someone, not me right off the top of my head, this was a conversation I remember a month or so ago, but we do have a limited number of FTE we can fill, and I think as Trisha was saying, that's been distributed kind of in that same distribution that the old model was, but now we just have fewer positions in each of the, what were program areas, now it'll be centers and institutes.
So, and what Matt is saying is with that exact financials, this is all fitting into the full financial budget, and so where we're seeing other areas that we're able to, so we're working through this all of across the whole geography of where we're seeing savings as well as opportunities to fill these positions. We will have a more solid number for you coming up here shortly once we get closer to this fall and filling in these positions. So of what that exact amount is that we're able to contribute to that educator pool, again, it fluctuates just a bit as we go forward. So I just want to be careful in saying this is the only, you know, this is the set amount of pooled resources that we have because it can fluctuate a bit as we move forward and we start seeing opportunities. We don't want to give up as much as we have to in these areas. We're trying to be cautious and careful. So, again, we're trying to meet the needs as we can, and while also knowing we needed to take cuts. So as Matt mentioned, I get a little bit cautious about saying to an exact number that we need to cut, because once we start seeing other ways of moving and shifting people around, finding opportunities for, you know, extension specialist positions, we want to fulfill our obligations to our staff and faculty. So,
hey Matt, this is Jenny Erickson. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So, kind of building on what you were just saying, I think one thing that would be really helpful, and it may be difficult to provide at this point, but like from the county perspective, from Stark County's perspective, I hear, you know, they keep wondering where are the savings in this $3.6 million? And they're looking at, you know, having the same potential number of staff in the county plus a new administrator. And so I think they're wondering where are the savings in this $3.6 million or that extension had to come up with. So I think a document that said, you know, X amount of dollars were saved in administration, X amount of dollars would be saved in the county level, something that kind of outlines where these $3.6 million are coming from.
Yeah, thank you, Jenny. That's been brought up before, and I'm not sure if that's, you know, this, we're still quite in a state of flux yet with a lot of unknowns and stuff, but I think I'm guessing, I'm looking at Tricia, whether at least a draft document or at least kind of a real general overview of where these savings are going to be coming from might be generated.
Yeah, and again, as we've been, the way that this has been rolled out is piece by piece, and some of the way that this has been implemented, so we're seeing those savings as the new design has been decided. So so that's why, again, that's why we've made some of these, we've shifted over time of what those pieces look like. So we will have, I mean, that's the expectation. We've been able to show some of the savings in different pieces of the organization once we get to the county level, once this is finalized. Come this fall and we have more secure decisions on these county positions, then we can start, we can articulate what those savings look like. So thank you. Yeah, that's the chancellor, that's the expectation is that we'll be able to release that full across the organization note. So this is just one piece of that full reorganization.
One thing I wanted to point out real briefly, and it kind of fits under this how to have a constructive conversation about programmatic needs. Some time ago, and a number of county administrators have kind of asked this question, or even committees, they remember the chancellor and I think the dean saying there will be somewhat of like a similar to a la carte menu that counties will have to choose from. And that's certainly a lot easier when you've got a vacancy and such. But one of the things, if you look back at the decision memo on 630, it was part of the Next Generation Project. It's on the website, but that 64-page document that talks about each of the institutes and centers, if you look at those centers under programming, and so if we look at the Communities Institute, there's a Center for Community and Economic Development, and several bullet points under each of those programming titles. So it might be community placemaking, community downtown vitality, community regional food systems, economic development, energy, government, civic engagement. In the other center for organization leadership development, there's organizational development, strategic planning, conflict resolution, and such. A couple of the area extension directors and myself have kind of pulled those bits and pieces out and have shared that with the committees, and I think it's been helpful in terms of spurring on some conversations about, you know, we didn't realize that maybe this was available or these were, you know, different things that we could select from. So especially with vacant positions, that's worked well. I'm thinking most committees would say that, well, our educators in the office are on track right now and they can keep doing the work that they're doing. But it does kind of address that a la carte menu that was suggested some time back, and a way to think about it that way, especially with positions and what are the priorities for the county, so that it doesn't just come down to kind of the people. It really is driven on programmatic needs.
Matt, this is Shelley Tiedemann in Fond du Lac County, and the question that I have, based upon what you just said, is that we have all of these centers that are listing all these program potential things that people could be working in. Where does the future come into this? Where does those programming needs that a county identifies come into this place? Because right now, what on this paper are all the things that currently are being done.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the future of where we are going to be, I mean, is there going to be a needs assessment that talks about future things? Because maybe some of that stuff that's currently on there, it's not important anymore.
Right, right. And so that's where the kind of at the more grassroots level, the area extension directors are going to be communicating up the chain to the centers and the institute directors as well as the associate deans. So that conduit, I guess, is, as we've referred to that in the past, the two-way, you know, type of communication in terms of assessing those programmatic needs. I know Dave always cringes a little bit when we say needs assessment. You know, he's really, we're trying to frame this as programmatic needs and opportunities. But you're right, and maybe that is a bit premature, Shelley, to kind of list this as we are going to be doing these type of things. But it does get the committee to think and reflect, and maybe even say, well, they're missing this aspect on opioid use or something. We need to do that in this county. Other counties have, you know, a lot of nonprofits already working on that, so it might be considered duplicating. So we're going to, you know, shy away from that in those type of counties. But we will be having those discussions. And I'm running out of time. Although we've been fielding a lot of questions as we've gone. Tricia, do you want to give a quick update on the associate deans and institute directors?
Yep. So we'll be hearing the announcement on and we was shared that hiring for an associate dean, or Patrick Robinson, has been accepted that position, and we'll start August 1st. Carl is looking at a interim associate dean for the other department as well. And so those individuals will get up and running, and we'll start working on those hiring for those institute directors. Now, we do see a good combination of external. That's been definitely a feedback of having some external searches as well as having some as internal. So I know with those institute directors, trying to draw from the largest pool we can, that's been conveyed as well. So you'll see that coming up. One, we're going to need to, so we expect those associate deans really to weigh in on those position descriptions. So we wanted to get them in place, which will happen August 1st, we expect for Patrick, and probably shortly after that interim position, so that we can get rolling on those institute directors. I don't expect, though, that to hold up starting the strategizing for the extension specialist positions. For example, I don't expect to wait for the institute directors to get in place. We'll start working with the program directors on that prioritization as well as associate teams. So. And Matt, I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you, Tricia, for that update. And you're right. I think the timeline for the rest of the educators and such, program coordinators, and those are still in very rough draft until we get the center directors, institute directors on place. But I think we'll be looking at kind of a cohort hire, bringing in a group as one large kind of system of hiring, and then assigning kind of more of the geographic areas where they might be interested. But again, a lot of that's still in discussion right now. But that, you know, Dave and I were hopeful that maybe that's September, maybe October, something like that. But at least to begin to have people ready to go for the new year, because if the budgets are in place, we'd certainly like to have some of those decisions and people in place, I think, by January 1st. So, and those would be internal searches with opportunities for interims, probationary faculty, and internal candidates to apply. So, okay, well, I know we're right up against 10 o'clock, and sorry, I thought maybe we'd have more time for questions, and hopefully your questions were asked as we were moving along. If you have any, feel free to contact myself, Dave Berard, Tricia, and we'll try to respond to your questions. So have a great day, everyone. I appreciate everyone's time.
Thank you.